This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Doug Kazarian of BetUS, of Only Players, formerly of ESPN, will join us. We will go over everything in the NFL, maybe talk some college football, maybe get to his thoughts on the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight Friday night, if you can call it a fight. What a disaster that was. I will get to my thoughts on that in just a couple minutes because, oh my goodness, I just need to vent. What an absolute train wreck that was, and what Netflix did. What a horrible job and an all-around disgrace that was Friday night. But we'll start with football and the big themes, as there usually are here, after a football and after an NFL Sunday. And the big game of the day, the Chiefs-Bills, I actually don't think is the big story. Now, Allen's going to flip the favorite for MVP. He was outstanding. He's the second best player in the league. I know Lamar's won two MVPs and he's won none. And Lamar was the MVP coming in today. And good job by Matt McAfee on Thursday into Friday telling us, hey, Lamar should not be plus 110. He's 100% right. If they lose to Pittsburgh, that's their fourth loss. Pittsburgh always holds Lamar down. That was an unjustified number. And we've seen that now where Allen has flipped to the favorite. He's plus 130. Again, am I dying to bet him plus 130? No, especially because same thing with Lamar, where he's got some tough games coming up. They have a bye, then they have they play the Lions, they play the 49ers, so he could lose a couple games. I do think this is still wide open. Maybe Goff got into it, but maybe Goff got back into it. But I don't think the MVP is the big takeaway, although Allen is now the favorite. And I actually don't think I look at either of these teams differently. I know you can come in after the Chiefs lose and the Bills win, and you're supposed to say, all right, now the Bills are great. Now they're the team to beat. The Chiefs are no good. That's not the case. I mean, the Chiefs were due for one of these losses. I think I said on Friday, you know, if I had to pick, I'd probably pick the Bills to win. Chiefs actually teasers did not get there, which is a tough beat because that was a pretty close game in a game where, you know, you figured the Chiefs could stay within at least the 8.5 on the teaser. But the Chiefs had not lost since last Christmas. This is the NFL. Every game is close. Every game of theirs is close. They were due for one of these, and they always lose to Buffalo. I mean, beating Kansas City in the regular season is not the issue for Buffalo. This is the fourth straight win for Buffalo. Beating them in the playoffs is the issue. So this was a chance for Kansas City to put away the one seed, and now that's at least in doubt, where Kansas City has one loss, Buffalo has two, but Buffalo has the tiebreaker. And Pittsburgh now, you have to throw them into the mix where they have two losses, and they do play Kansas City head-to-head on Christmas here, which is going to be on Netflix, which hopefully Netflix has their shit together by the time these football games come around. So I still look. If you're a Steelers fan, you don't care what I have to say about the Steelers because I've been wrong, wrong, wrong. I didn't think they'd be 8.5. I thought they have a chance at a top five pick. I thought they had no quarterback. I've been completely wrong as they continue to win these Steeler type of games. But I would characterize it as this. Kansas City still a good, solid favorite to be the one. But Buffalo now has a shot, although the schedule makes it tough. And I guess you could say Pittsburgh has a shot because the schedule, although it's tough, we've been saying the schedule is going to be tough all year and they just keep beating these good teams. So not a disaster for Kansas City. Doesn't mean Buffalo's now the favorite in the AFC. They're going to have to beat them in the playoffs. And it does at least give them a shot to be the one, although a long shot. Give credit to McDermott because to the people that want to, hey, take the points, kick every field goal on fourth down, he was aggressive. He said, hey, fourth and two, let me go for it. I don't want to give Mahomes the ball back with a five-point game. Even if I make the field goal and if I miss, I'm in really in trouble. So give him credit. He was aggressive. Allen takes it all the way to the house, gets the touchdown, which actually, you know, affected the spread because there was a scenario there where it looked like Buffalo could maybe run out the clock and the game lands on two, and that would put the game under as well. The game goes over on the touchdown. The game gives the Bills the cover, and they win. So good win for the Bills. No big deal for the Chiefs. I still don't think this is a great Chiefs team. You look at statistically yards per play allowed versus yards per play gained. This is not a dominant team, but they got Mahomes. They've got a pretty good defense, but that defense was exposed a little bit today. But they're going to be deep into the mix here. This doesn't change how I feel about either team. One of the big stories, other than Pittsburgh beating Baltimore and Pittsburgh now putting their nose into the fact that, hey, maybe this is a team that could be in like an AFC title game that could win the division. I'm still not there, but again, I've been wrong all the way around the board here with Pittsburgh. The big story for me, San Francisco might be dead. It just might not be their year. It's always something. It's either missing kicks. The defense today didn't come up with big stops on Sunday here against Seattle where they sacked Geno Smith. It looks like Seattle, you know, is up against the clock. Not many timeouts left. Seattle gets right back up, right on the line. Geno runs for 20 yards, you know, basically back-to-back plays. I think there was a pass in between there was to Smith and Jigba. But it just might not be the year for San Francisco. Injuries, defense, you know, kicker getting hurt, kicker missing kicks. It's almost like a bad baseball team where they hit, they don't pitch. When they pitch, they don't hit. It's always something with the 49ers. They're 5-5, and their schedule is brutal because they are now going to Green Bay, and Green Bay survived, by the way. I was getting ready to kill Green Bay about how overrated they are, and they still might be. But they go to Green Bay, which is not an easy game. Green Bay gets the kick. They block the kick. They beat Chicago. But at Green Bay for San Francisco, then at the Bills, home for the Bears. Okay. For the Rams again, at the Dolphins. They play the Lions on December 30th. That's a primetime game. And then at Arizona. I don't know that San Francisco is winning the division. I don't know that San Francisco is going to even make the playoffs. I would say, and I'd be curious when these odds reopen, I think they're an underdog to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to fire. It's always something. Now, Purdy's pretty good. McCaffrey's starting, you know, he's back. Sometimes he looks explosive. Sometimes he doesn't. Maybe it's just a mental thing where he's hesitant to, you know, really plant and take off. He had over 100 yards between the rushing and the receiving on Sunday, but it just might not be San Francisco's year. They might be done. Now, again, you're dealing with Arizona and Seattle and these teams. Nobody's pulled away, so maybe you can steal that division with 8 or 9 wins. But remember their tiebreak scenario. They've already lost to Arizona, and that was a game in San Francisco. They've now lost a home game to Seattle, and they lost a home game to the Rams. So their division tiebreaker scenarios, the head-to-head scenarios, you're going to have a hard time winning tiebreakers. And I don't know that their record's going to be good enough with this schedule where they are at 5-5, where they can win the division cleanly without tiebreakers. So San Francisco is in a world of danger. I actually don't think they're going to make the playoffs. This just might not be their year. The other one, and I talked a little bit about it. Every Pittsburgh-Baltimore game is just the same. It's close. It's low scoring. The dog covers. The under gets through. It's just every year. I mean, I'm not a big trends guy, but that's one trend where every game is, you know, every game between them is 2017, 19, 14, 16, 13. So that game stayed under, that stayed well under. And now these division odds have not reopened. My guess when they do reopen is the division is basically a coin flip. I don't know if you can get Baltimore at plus money to win the division. And I don't know how much I want to keep fading the Steeler team because I'm just wrong about them all the time. I got to give them more credit. Although, look, Tomlin, great regular season coach. It still has been, you know, 8-9 years since he won a playoff game. But I'll be interested when the divisions reopen, what that price is. And I still would probably get suckered in if I had to bet it. I probably still take Baltimore at plus money. They will play again in Baltimore. Like I mentioned, Pittsburgh does have a tough schedule, but again, the tough schedule has not manifested where if you're Pittsburgh, I know, and I'll read it here in a second. You do at least get, and they are the Thursday night game. And there are a lot of ugly dogs on Thursday night, Pittsburgh, laying 5.5 in Cleveland. I would look towards taking the points here. Division game, rivalry game. Pittsburgh in the neighborhood now of weighing almost a touchdown on the road, I don't think is justified, or not justified, but that's just a different, you know, level of a level of team here that I don't know that they're ready for to be to be laying this kind of number. So they are at the Browns on Thursday night, at the Bengals, home for the Browns again. Then they are at Philly, at Baltimore, home for the Chiefs on Christmas, then the Bengals again. Now, maybe the Bengals are out of it by that point for the final game. The Bengals playing the Chargers right now. But that is still a gauntlet of a schedule. So if you can get the Ravens, anything around even money, plus money, I'll go down with the ship again. I would suggest a bet on the Ravens. So that is the football. Jets are a disaster. Games were pretty good. San Francisco in a ton of trouble. Bills Chiefs was fun. It always is. Not the classic, you know, blast team with the ball, 13 seconds kind of game where they just go back and forth in the out-duel. The game kind of fizzled. They didn't score for a while in the third quarter, and Kansas City just didn't have much offense in the second half. Their defense, you know, didn't make stops when they needed to, but again, I don't feel completely differently about either team. So that's the football. We'll talk to Doug here in a minute, but I just need to vent about the boxing on Friday because what an absolute joke this was. I didn't even know there was this fight until I think it was Thursday when I was doing the other pod with Gil Alexander. And by the way, finally bouncing back. I think all the picks I gave out on Friday hit. Last couple of weeks have been good after a rough start. So been hanging with it. Feel like I've got a good feel for these teams now, hopefully. And again, it's week to week. Anything can happen. But I feel like I've got a better feel for these teams. Even the picks I where it's on the fence about giving out that I didn't, you know, did well. But I knew Tyson and Paul were supposed to fight in the summer. I knew it got pushed back. I had no idea until Gil on Thursday tells me, hey, it's Friday night. I said, oh, wow, okay. As we got closer, I got more and more excited about it because, look, I'm not a huge boxing fan, but growing up in the 90s, there was always maybe 1-2 fights a year that you got really excited about. You know, you order it with the little black box or you go to a friend's house and, you know, a bunch of buddies would watch it. And it was an event. It was fun. I missed that. I was glad to have it back Friday. Just the anticipation of, you know, the guys walking into the ring and all of the anticipation is just nothing like a great boxing match. And we haven't had it really since, I guess, Mayweather McGregor was, you know, counted. That's one where you had to watch it. Mayweather Pacquiao. But other than that, boxing has sort of died as a sport. I was so looking forward to this. But what they did on Friday, first of all, Netflix couldn't even, I couldn't even get it on. Every time I would go in, it would pause and it would kick me back to the beginning. I'd have to fast forward. I'd go in again. I'd watch it for a minute and say, finally, I'm in. I can watch it. It'd pause again. What a disgrace by Netflix. How are you not more prepared? You knew you were going to have record viewing and, you know, 30 million people watching. How you're not more prepared than this, I have no idea. What a joke by them. Absolutely impossible to watch with the freezing, the buffering, the lag. Just an absolute disgrace from Netflix. And then the fight stunk. And by the way, Rosie Perez, we didn't need her. We didn't need Roy Jones Jr. The commentating was awful. This was not, you know, HBO Sports in the 90s where you had Jim Lampley and Larry Merchant and you had a great production. This was horribly produced. Everything from Netflix was not even a C or D level. This was an F level production, from being able to watch the stupid fight to the awful commentating. And then the fight stunk. I mean, Tyson was out of gas right away. You figure maybe he's going to make a late charge and go for a knockout. They're just sort of tapping each other. Paul bows to him. Tyson doesn't even make a charge. He's just happy to get the hell out of there with his check. And then after the fight, a couple things that were just ridiculous. They ask him, could this possibly be your last fight? Well, first of all, he's fucking 60 years old or thereabouts. Of course, it could be his last fight. And then he says, you never know. I might want to do this again. Do me a favor. Don't fight again. None of us need to watch. None of us are going to watch. That was awful. That was fine. We don't need to see again. You were great at one point. Not that we expect a lot from a 58-year-old, but please do not do us any favors. Do not step in the ring again. That was just a joke. And then Rosie Perez, who, again, did not assert herself well in this game. She was awful to listen to. She says, wow, what a great night there was for boxing. I know people say, oh, the undercards were great. I don't care about the undercards. I wanted Tyson Paul to be good. I wanted somebody to get knocked out. I wanted some juice, some excitement. That was all in all just an absolute complete waste of fucking time on Friday night. I was so annoyed. I was just trying to get in, trying to get out, refresh, go back in. You can't do a worse job than Netflix did. And Netflix has Christmas games. Netflix has Chiefs Steelers and whatever Christmas games we have on in here in a month. So hopefully that is no indication of what we're going to get on Christmas, because that was a nightmare trying to watch that awful, awful fight as Paul wins and everybody. That's the problem with boxing. You get all excited for these. This has happened before where everybody gets excited and you pay the money for the pay-per-view. This one was free, but sometimes you pay the money for the pay-per-view and everyone that loses is the fans, because it's either, you know, you get a questionable decision with the judges, or it's just an unexciting fight. I mean, this just felt like a scam. Again, not that you paid any money, but just in terms of the time wasted, oh my God, what a waste of time that was. And we do not need to see Tyson again. So terrible job by Netflix, terrible job by Tyson, Paul, everybody. Nobody came out of this ahead, except for those two guys who, you know, cashed. I think Tyson made $20 million. I'm sure Paul made about that, but my goodness, what a complete waste of time. All right, enough of that. We'll be back. Doug Kazarian, that is next. This Should Have Been More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him onlyplayers.com, BetUS, where he does great work. He joins us once again. It's great. Doug Kazarian. Doug, fun day of football, man. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, I guess the Detroit Lions are the only team that is impervious to flat spots. Other than that, the NFL is just super unpredictable and crazy. But I will say the Lions are a covering machine. That's one thing that resonates from today.
14 points is too many, though. It's just too many points. I was raised with the belief, or just like it was just kind of the default in the NFL. When the line is double digits, you take the points, you take the dog, or you pass. And I think that, like, the data doesn't really back that out. Not that I want to start with Lions Jags, but I think the last 12 years, double digit favorites are hitting like nearly 60%. Maybe it's the disparity in the quarterbacks. It's more of a passing game where you get separation, but this take the points or pass doesn't really work anymore.
Well, obviously the money came on the dog Sunday morning, and, you know, they're habitual. I just, the narrative, and you got to, it's really betting in my eyes, because the math guys shape the market, right? So it's really like money ball meeting the eye test, you know, scout. And if you can find the perfect balance between the two as a handicapper and just kind of know and implement, it's like, all right, well, the Jags are going to the bye. They don't love their coach. It's not like they're going to circle the wagons and win one for the Gipper. And it's not like they know the true power rating of the Jags with Mac Jones. So, odds maker told me this a long time ago, and it's always stuck with me, that when there are injuries, they hate it. The odds makers don't have a clue. They prefer both teams full strength. They can make an NFL line in their sleep and go from there. But it's these moving parts. Like, what's the drop off from Dak to Cooper Rush? Like, they don't know.
Chiefs Bills, biggest game of the day. Do you feel differently about either team after the game than you did before?
No, I mean, I had wondered how hungry the Chiefs are going to be just because they've taken everyone's best shot. And I guess that's the wrong way to say it, hungry. It's just, what is the ceiling on their gas tank? Like, how, because I just think they're tired and you know, like given last week's craziness and they're, you know, the circus that they had in the San Francisco game in the second half. And they've had that, the gut wrencher with the Bengals earlier this year. And then even opening night with the Ravens. I just wonder what's left in the tank. Whereas the Bills have been on sort of cruise control. And then they just obviously, even the Josh Allen touchdown run, the guy around the 6 yard line just flung himself like a rocket instead of actually trying to tackle him with his arms. So things like that. And then Kelce after the interception was running off the field, sort of clapping, like applauding either the Bills or their own effort to make a run at an undefeated season. I just don't think they were desperate. Whereas I think the Bills played more desperate, even with all the injuries they had.
Yeah, and it does make the one seed more interesting, where if the Chiefs had won, now they have zero losses. Right. Now the Bills have three. They're not a factor for the they got the tiebreaker. Now it kind of brings everyone back to the pack. It's still probably, I wonder if you disagree, you still favor the Chiefs because they have the one loss. Steelers, they have a tough schedule. Bills have a tough schedule, but at least it makes it a conversation. But you agree that Kansas City still probably a prohibitive favorite to be the one?
Yeah, I mean, they have the head-to-head with Baltimore, obviously, and – the Bills have at the Lions, home to the Niners, but that's it, right? I mean, yeah, at the Rams, I guess. But I worry about the Chiefs one or two more times. Like, they've been playing with fire. We can't assume that they stop playing with fire the rest of the way. So, I mean, they face in Week 18 at the Broncos. That's no layup.
Yeah.
Even, you know, assuming both teams are going to want it. At the Steelers, and I don't know. Like, the Chargers come into their house. They play the Texans at their place. I'm not going to let one game completely change how I feel in terms of doubting Mahomes and company, but I don't think they have the one seed, you know, locked up, so to speak. Not that you're implying that. I'm just,
no.
You know, I think this is far from over. We could see a lot. I mean, look, they should have lost last week, right? As an 8-point favorite, yes. 7.5-point favorite. So there's a lot of football left for sure.
Life on the line, I'd still pick them to be the one, but like, we're not even having this conversation. If they win the game, you can pretty much just
correct.
Etch their name in the one if they'd won. Now it's at least a conversation, although they still, you know, have a, you know, somewhat of a leg up. Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Do you feel differently about either of those teams? Tucker, which I should have mentioned in the beginning, a lot of missed kicks today. Cleveland guy missed a bunch of kicks. Tucker missed two, and that's one of the weirder downfalls. I know he's getting older, but for him to go as automatic as he was a couple years ago to basically to the point where you can't even trust him anymore is really strange. Lamar was okay. He wasn't great. He's no longer the favorite for MVP. Do you feel differently about either of these teams?
A little bit, because Baltimore showed me last Thursday, so two Thursdays ago, you know, the first half they were sort of pedestrian and then had the big second half and he made plays. And I actually think he's gotten so much better as just a quarterback. Like the plays he extended today, he hit the guy dropped it off the chest. And then the other play where he swung it to the side, like he's done some really nice evolving as a quarterback. Not that I doubted it, but it's just awesome to see that he's so much more of a player and such a dynamic force. He's more of a force, I should say. Yeah, I feel differently. I still thought the Steelers were a legitimate threat for sure. Like they've impressed me since Russell Wilson quarterback change. And I loved the move to Fields to ice the game. Even though the slide was bad, but other than that, like I loved it. So this Steelers team is definitely like a threat. What do you think about this? I would need more than 40-1, but what do you make of the Broncos to win the Super Bowl at like 50-1? If you can get 50-1.
I would still need more. I still don't know if Knicks can do it. They're still not probably winning division. If you really believe in them, hey, I'll ask you this way. Do you think they have a chance to win the division?
No.
You're probably
the problem
talking
is they're
about,
not going to get home field advantage.
That's what I mean. So you probably playoffs, just, hey, right? Let's bet them to make the playoffs, which you can still get a decent number on that. Those odds aren't up, but maybe you get them around even money. And then once they get in, you bet them on the money line, you roll it over, which people have a hard time executing. I understand that. It's amazing we're even talking about that. That team is talented. Peyton's done a great job. Look, I was wrong. They were 0-2. Like they were 0-2 and they looked bad, but
right.
Boy, I would need more than 40-1.
I think it's important to remember that teams are allowed to get better, right? So yes. In all sports, I always like I tell people about the Denver Nuggets. I'm like, they're gonna be really good in like January and February and March because these guys like Christian Brown and Watson, all these guys are gonna finally have enough 10,000 hours thing where they're gonna be not just these like new starters, blah, blah, blah. They're gonna have some growing pains and Jokic is going to carry the load until then. But I do think if he can learn, have a learning curve, kind of like what Russell Wilson was when he was early with the Seahawks, right? And they made that run with that defense and everything. I think Bo Nix can kind of do a version of that. And if these weapons are good, like I think it is, and Peyton does a nice job and Nix continues to evolve. I mean, remember, he's not a young quarterback, a rookie coming in, right? He's had a lot of experience. And again, 50-1, but they went on that run where they won 5 of 6. And then they had that tough spot at the Ravens, got blown out. But that game was sort of close around halftime. And then there was like one play. And then they should have beat the Chiefs, right? Like they are, I think the AFC is super deep, but it's not, there's no dominant force like the Lions.
Do you think San Francisco makes the playoffs?
No, I'm not sold on that because the Super Bowl hangover's legit. Like there's enough proof that there's something to it, right? And also just the injury bug is a randomness. So if it goes well for you in 1 year, it's likely to go bad the next year. And I think, you know, not having Kittle today, things like that. And Kyle Shanahan, I don't trust him in game management. He screwed up today, punting. And he's had enough mistakes blowing the Super Bowl last year on certain play calls and things like that. Like, you know, you can't have all the traits, right? If you're really good, really smart, you don't usually have the looks. If you have the looks, you don't really have the brains. Like he can't do it all, right? He's a wizard with play calling, but his game management is beyond bad. So I don't think they're going to, I think there's enough, like any of those four teams can win it. So I'll take the other three teams.
I always refer to him with our buddy, Chris Felica, the Bear, Cautious Kyle. Call him Cautious Kyle because he kicks his field goals, he punts. And remember last year in the Super Bowl, he actually went for it like 4th and 3 randomly and he got it and he scored a touchdown, which I was surprised by. That was one of those spots where I don't think even I would have gone for it, and I'm aggressive. So you wanted to, instead of punt, you wanted to go for it, 4th and 6 or so?
Yeah, because there was enough time where like Seattle didn't really, like time didn't matter that much.
Yeah.
That he could have basically put away the game by going for it. And I'm also of the like belief that if you have like weapons like they do or a stud quarterback, you should be able to get 6 yards whenever you want, like in your sleep. I don't know how anyone stops anyone on any like, right? Like these guys are so big. Like you just run DK Metcalf at like a stick route. Like how do you stop that? Welker would always run for like 4 yards and fake one way. Go. It's like, I don't know how you get, I mean, maybe if a defensive lineman puts his paw up and gets a tip. But there's, if you scheme accordingly, especially in college, like I don't understand now if there's any incompletes.
I would have, at least if I'm San Francisco, pretended like I'm going to go for it and tried to draw them off sides. And then if I don't get it, then you could punt, take your delay of game. But you could have at least gone for the hard count, try to get the free 5, and then you're set up 4th and 1, where then you're obviously going for it. So, yeah, and if you look at the schedule, at Green Bay, Buffalo, which is on the road, they play the Lions again. These in their division, and they play the Rams again. They play the Cardinals again. A bunch of these on the road, and their tiebreak scenario is a disaster because they lost all these division games. So, I'm assuming you think Arizona wins that division, or not necessarily.
Well, I was just being difficult in terms of like yes or no. That means I get the three other teams, so I'll take the three other teams, right? Like the yes no. In terms of who I think. It's tough because you're right. San Francisco should have a couple more wins, but they didn't have a kicker in the Cardinals home loss. I think honestly, Seattle.
Wow. Like,
I think they're pretty good. And the coach is learning on the fly.
I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised. I like Arizona. I understand that it's completely wide open.
I do too. They both have good home field advantages.
They do. And if you look at the coach of the year race, Harbaugh in the mix, Tomlin, you got to give some shot. Andy Reid was, you know, maybe that takes a hit. It definitely takes a hit because he's going to have to really go like 15-2, maybe or better to win that award. But Tomlin, Harbaugh, Gannon, I'm sure there's guys I'm missing. Sean Payton, there's a good 5, 6, 7 candidates. Campbell could go 15-2 and maybe win the award. Do you have anyone you think's worth a bet, or do you think, you know, there's a clear favorite right now for coach of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone betting this like 5-1 or less is silly because there's going to be such fluctuation. I really think people, they're getting better at it, like, you know, gambling Twitter or whatever. They're getting better at it, but people still don't grasp the concept of forecasting and projecting. Like McCain in the NBA, for him to be the rookie of the favorite is comical. Like, Maxey's going to come back and all these other guys, like, his usage is not going to be there. Now, at least he'll remain a starter. But Pritchard should not be the sixth man of the year favorite. Now, if the betting action and the risk tells it was, okay, fine. But he's not going to close out games when Porzingis is back. He's not going to have – he's going to make a few three-pointers a game, and that's it. And maybe he gets a token award if they finish with the 1 or the 2 seed. But There's got to be another guy who emerges like Malik Monk once he's healthy and who actually finishes games and has like that Ginobili role where he's really a sixth starter, whereas Pritchard is not. So I think a lot of these, like the Heisman was just laughable. Like I was chuckling the whole time. Some of these guys were favorites. I was like, who in their right mind thinks that this guy's going to be a favorite come November? Like I would just be taking money. Like I don't think Ashton Jeanty has a chance at all. So when he was the favorite, I laughed. I think he has a little bit of a chance, but we're forgetting that there's going to be these huge SEC championship game, Big Ten. There's going to be all these big championship games. And I think Travis Hunter is going to win only because he plays a position that's it's unlikely he falls on his face, like a starting quarterback loses or whatever. So even if Colorado loses the Big 12 title game or something like that, it's not going to be he's going to have a stat, or unless he gets beaten on the game when he touched on it, something silly like that. I just don't think, because I think the voting process is so stupid. Like, let's be honest, Cam Ward should win the MVP or the Heisman Trophy. What he's having to do, so he gets docked because his defense gives up a million points. I mean, he's just such a dynamic player. He should win the Heisman, and maybe he would in another season, but just the how fickle some of these awards market are. So come back to your coach of the year. The earlier in the season, like even now, like week, well, whatever it is, 12, 11, you should only be looking at long shots, because what's the risk reward of all this? For example, like I was saying this last week, like there's no way I'd bet Lamar at minus 110, right? So let's say Lamar, the Ravens won big and Lamar had another great game. Okay, so he goes to minus 200. Okay, so let's say he wins the MVP. You missed out on a minus 110 bet in mid-November that would have cashed Super Bowl weekend. Okay, we'll live to fight another day, right? Like not a big deal. The positions you need to worry about in all of these situations is when you miss out on huge money lines going much lower, like it's 20 to 1 going to 8 to 1, a 13 to 1 to go to a 4 to 1. Those are the ones you need to target. So any of these Coach of the Year awards, there's so many different paths it can go down. I wouldn't even consider this one-way betting market, this index betting, when you have all these like 6 to 1, 4 to 1s, because there's just so many permutations of how the season can unfold. That, like, I understood grabbing Andy Reid a couple weeks ago at 20 to 1 because if they get past the Bills, they might have smooth sailing and things like that. And he went down to 8 to 1 and things like that. So I understand the allure of that, but you have to really think this stuff through and understand how important the last like 3 weeks of the season primetime games are.
And to that point, and we were talking about it the other day on my Friday pod, that Lamar was plus 110 to win the MVP coming in this game because he already had three losses. If he lost to Pittsburgh, he's a 7-4 quarterback with still like half the season to go and a guy who's won twice already. So Allen is flipped to the favorite. Do you think there's anyone worth looking at in that market, or that's just kind of, you know, that there's too
after
many
I say all that, I actually think there's probably value on Josh Allen, but not much. So you miss out on a plus 150 bet. I mean, they still got the Niners this weekend. I think Allen's going to win because I don't think the other candidates have that good of cases, right? So I don't think Lamar, I think there's, like, to your point, there's voter fatigue. He's a reigning MVP. They have enough losses.
Allen's never won.
And Allen's never won. They won the big game against Mahomes. I think he'll win other big games, right? So they do play, was it Detroit they have to play? They're at Detroit.
Yeah.
But then after that, he has three games where he can pad his stats, but he does play Detroit on the road in that sort of afternoon slot in the mid-December. That'll be a big one. But I don't, like, I'm of the belief Goff should never even be considered. So I think Hurts has a pulse at 12 plus 1200. Maybe Burrow can sort of take on the Josh Allen path like last year. So if Lamar didn't have that monster performance on Christmas night in San Francisco, maybe Allen would have won MVP because he got the Bills in the playoffs, like whatever it was, a 5-game win streak or whatever. So maybe Burrow can do that and his stats are there, but I wouldn't bet it at 21. The odds makers are on top of it, right? I don't think, like, I think Josh Allen's going to win by almost default. I don't think Mahomes can unless they just go bananas and he goes bananas the last 2 months. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think they're more defensive minded right now.
I'm with you.
So I would say Hurts is the only guy with double digit odds that I would consider. And I think there's dead money with Goff. Like, I really do. I don't think he could be considered at all. So I think it's Josh Allen's to win. And even if they lose like another game, which might happen at Detroit.
The only reason I wouldn't completely rule out Goff, first of all, Campbell, you could tell, wanted to pad his stats and get his confidence back. I mean, they're throwing the ball with, you know, up 50 points, which you don't see in the NFL. What if Detroit ever goes 15-2, 16-1? Then
Then Campbell should get coach of the year.
Allen loses three or four
games.
Ryan
Tannehill was the quarterback of a one seed. No one even considered him. Now, I'm not saying Goff is Tannehill, but he kind of is with all those weapons, right? It's just Goff's a good quarterback. He's fine, right? Like, he's a good quarterback. He's just not the most valuable player in the NFL when there's guys who have to shoulder so much of the burden. Like, we've seen what happens when Goff has to play, you know, certain situations.
Yeah.
Not just the five interception game, but, you know, he can't play in cold weather. Like, he,
I agree.
Third and seven at midfield, they run a draw, get 1 yard, and then they punt because they didn't get 4 yards on a draw. You don't do that with Josh Allen or Mahomes. Like, they just protect him a lot, right? They know his limitations. And Ben Johnson gets so much credit. Like, you can't have it every which way. You can't have this great play caller. You can't have this weapons and then try to shoehorn and tell me that Goff is an MVP. Should he get fourth place votes, third place votes, and they go 15-1, 15-2? Yeah, that's totally fair. He's just not the single most valuable player in the NFL. I think like 8 to 14 quarterbacks can do what he's doing and have that same record.
Anything on the Monday night game here? Texans laying about a touchdown on the road in Dallas.
So I wrote an article, and we're doing some contributing work for New York Post now. So I did an article basically breaking this down and just saying how I was talking about earlier, how oddsmakers hate injuries, how it's such a complicated scenario. You have Dallas, 12 wins, back-to-back-to-back seasons, already season gone, drop off from Dak, coming off a beatdown. Have they quit? Probably not. It's Monday Night Football. But then here's Houston off this demoralizing loss. And I was talking to one odds maker who basically said, yeah, I was basically evaluating Cooper Rush when he had those six starts and he went 5-1 in the years where Dallas had a good supporting cast and he did fine. He managed the game well and blah, blah, blah. Well, this is a bad team to begin with, right? So, you know, they have no defense. They don't have a running game. So Rush, I think Houston's going to kill him. I think Texans respond well off that demoralizing loss, but I know Sharps who took +7.5. But as this odds maker said, he's like, sharp money's been not necessarily right the last month and a half. So we just move accordingly. But for all we know, Texans win by 20.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is not a comfortable one to take. And you've mentioned it, like sometimes everyone on a game and everyone I'm sure will be on Houston, at least the public, sometimes those games do get home. And look at BYU Kansas Saturday, everyone's on Kansas. They're never going to win. Well, you know what? Sometimes everyone wins and you have games like that.
Well, and that's the thing with the betting space and some of this nonsense, whether it be TikTok and these, you know, keyboard warriors on Twitter, the confirmation bias, there's enough there for a square who wins 50% of the time, just because that's a long-term loser. Like 50% is not that far off from like a sharp who wins 56%. So there's enough confirmation bias when the ultimate reward is yourself picking a game and being right. That's what people are chasing. So there's enough positive reward for that and enough like, oh, I heard that sharp on the radio taking this team and they stink and, you know, grabbing Cowboys against the Eagles +7.5. They got blown out. Oh, what does that guy know? But, you know, they ignore the main signs. And there's, like I said, there's enough confirmation bias for people to believe what they want. But you're right. The public doesn't lose every pick. And sharps don't win every pick.
Last one. I had a miserable time trying to watch this Tyson Paul fight. I actually, once I found out it was Friday, I got really excited. I couldn't wait. It's boxing, and you know, it's nice to have that thing you're looking forward to. And we miss when boxing was in our lives. And I'm buffering. I'm going in and out. I have to restart. I have to fast forward. I wanted to basically, you know, chuck my remote control through the TV. I was so aggravated with Netflix. The fight stunk. The commentary stunk. Did you have a better viewing experience than I did?
I did. I watched it at Circa Sportsbook, so there was no buffering experience. I guess the only thing I would complain about is the assless chaps of Mike Tyson, but besides, while I was eating dinner before the fight. I did really well in the Mayweather-McGregor fight, and I did really well in this fight for different reasons. I didn't think it would be as one-sided of a fight going in. Obviously, during the fight, I couldn't believe the live line was -250 or -300 after three rounds. I played the over. I was just like, look, they're not going to have two-minute rounds and extra bigger gloves if they want this fight to end early, right? You just kind of have to be smart about this. I treated the boxing fight, this event, this charade of an event or whatever you want to call it, as though it was an awards kind of market, right? You have to use the human element to some of this stuff. This is not the randomness of a sport. And some guy tweeted me, he's like, how could you tell people to bet on this fight? I'm like, dude, I think you can make the argument that you should only bet on this fight and not these NFL games, right? Like, if you can put two and two together and connect some dots, you kind of know how this is going to play out. Now, I don't think the boxing matchup was as one-sided going in as, you know, Mayweather-McGregor was. So I actually had Tyson to win exactly in round two and exactly round three. There was no chance Jake Paul was going to try to win early because you got to tire out the old man. So there was only a certain way this fight could go. And then I had all these props for the overs. And frankly, you know, Jake Paul got the memo. He says he probably could have finished him in the sixth round or so, fifth, sixth, seventh. But he's like, I didn't want to hurt anyone that didn't need to be hurt. And great, we all cashed our overs because of it. I think they're smart and they know who's writing their checks.
What was the viewing experience of people around you? Were people kind of getting frustrated that, you know, nobody was going for the knockout? The fight just kind of hit a stalemate. Was it?
Well, I think everyone was rooting for Tyson, anyone who's above a certain age. So we were fired up. Once he comes walking in with the knee brace, I was worried. I don't think anyone's done really well with a knee brace. You know, people were tweeting at me like pictures of pro wrestlers, like that doesn't really count. So, I was a little worried, but he looked good. He just also looked old real quickly. And so it was kind of sad watching like the last four rounds. I was a little disappointed. But, you know, seeing him move in the ring and all that stuff, he still got it. Like I talked to a lot of boxing guys beforehand when I was handicapping it for all week. And even guys who don't bet, but they know boxing, they were explaining stuff to me and things like that. Tyson didn't go to his bag of tricks. I thought the biting of the glove was weird. That couldn't have helped his strategy. But he didn't go to his bag of tricks. He didn't throw one uppercut. His combos weren't there. He landed maybe one or two good punches in the first couple rounds, and that's it. I was expecting more of a flurry from him, but then you could see he got wobbly and stuff. He was gassed for sure. And it is what it is. I kind of had an open mind. Obviously, when you win money, you think the fight's better than it is.
Right.
But it kind of played out like I thought. I was curious about whether it'd be an actual knockdown. I didn't think there would definitely be one, but I also didn't think there definitely would not be one. Because Tyson had a real boxing background, I was curious to see how it is. But like, I think this is where the sport could go, or where maybe sporting events could go. You know, how many times on sports talk radio, especially Killing Time in the summer, you know, I remember 10, 15 years ago, it's like, could I play in the WNBA? I mean, you have all this stuff. Could I kick a 35-yard field goal in a game? Like, you know, not that we're going to go down that path, but we might, like, you know, Ivicin did one where it was, you know, could I score a penalty kick on a real goalie? You know, there's all that sort of stuff where who knows if we do these goofy events. I mean, Barstool does a ton of these types of things. So maybe there'll be some celebrity stuff, right? People who obviously move the needle that, I mean, look, we have the golf matches, right? Barkley and Tom Brady and Rodgers and Mahomes.
Which was fun during COVID, but has kind of, the luster has come off that a bit.
Right. So seeing Mike Tyson, I mean, a generational dude, once the baddest man on the planet, you have to find guys that really can move the needle, like Johnny Manziel doing a quarterback challenge or something like that. We might have this kind of nonsense because that's the society we have. That's the banana republic we have at times.
And Matt Eumann's friend of the show has proclaimed that he could successfully kick penalty kicks. I remember starting like the Euros of the summer, he goes, how the hell do these guys miss the kicks? I could make those kicks in my sleep. So just want to have that on the record.
It's really awesome to think about. I wish it could be, we could like pause the Bills game and be like, all right, let's let a fan try. We need to do this for $10 million. Okay, you're done. Now let's resume the real game. Like, I would love to see stuff like this, but we just don't live in that world.
So do you think Matt Eumann could make a penalty kick?
I mean, practice and get a coach to help him and everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he could. What level goalie?
Haven't thought this through, to be honest. Haven't thought this through.
But not that the goalies have much of a chance.
I don't want to doubt him. Not betting against that guy.
If you get someone to teach you the ins and outs, I think you can do a lot of things.
Yep, totally agree. Doug, appreciate the time, man. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
Appreciate it as well. So on X or Twitter, at Doug Kazarian, and as you mentioned earlier, onlyplayers.com. We have an app now. We have all sorts of fun stuff, and I'll be doing content for other publications as well. Like I mentioned, the New York Post starting Monday.
Doug, good to catch up, man. Thanks for coming on.
You got it.
That will do it. Thank you to Doug Kazarian. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back Wednesday. See you then.